It's 4 o'clock, so why don't we start our meeting? I'd like to wish everyone a happy holiday coming up. And I'd like to apologize for not being able to show up at the last meeting. I have a new set of wheels here behind me because of a broken pelvis from a bike ride. So biking can be dangerous, folks. And as you get older, you don't heal as fast. So it hurts. Can we have a roll call, please?
Chairman Beasley?
Here.
Vice Chairman Latchford?
Here.
Commissioner Mason?
Here.
Commissioner Newell? Commissioner Silverson?
Here.
Great, we have a quorum.
Mr. Chairman, may I just briefly, we had a couple of folks note that oftentimes in our recorded meetings that people can't hear or they can't hear the recording. And so this is just a friendly reminder to all of you and to us that when you speak into the microphone, you need to have it about 2 inches from your mouth. Otherwise, it doesn't pick up. And since we post the recording afterwards, and when folks aren't identified, nobody really knows who's saying what. And so my friendly reminder to you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. We'll eat the microphones.
That's right.
Okay. I would like to start with a Pledge of Allegiance, if we could.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have a call to audience, and at this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the commission on any issue not listed on today's agenda. Pursuant to Arizona open meeting law, individual commission members may ask town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism by speakers. However, the commission may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during the call audience. In order to speak during the call to audience, please specify what you wish to discuss when completing the blue cards. And the blue cards, I've got one here. If there are others, okay. I've got one here from William Gardner.
I'll have to push the button on this one, right? It's on.
Okay. If you can raise it up. Raise the podium.
That's what I thought. Okay. There we go.
Mr. Chairman and members of the board, my name is Bill Garner. Full disclosure, a former council member as well. During my tenure as council member, we had a finance and bond committee prior to you guys getting instituted now as the Budget and Finance Commission. Very similar functions of what you're working on right now. However, one of the things that I do want to bring to your attention that I think does need some attention is the town's self-funded insurance program. And the reason I bring this up is one of the things, and I know that our town manager, Mary Jacobs, should be very familiar with the fact that where she came from in Sierra Vista actually has done this for quite some time, for many years. And by ordinance, they created a what they call an employees benefit trust board. And for folks that may be on the commission that have some background in insurance or know about the insurance industry, one of the things that's very important is to oversee your claims and losses as we go out throughout the entire year. Now, in 2012, 2013, the town looked at, under the old town manager, Greg Caton, self-funding insurance. One of the things is that you have a fiduciary responsibility. Now, during that period of time, and when I was on council, he held the position of being the fiduciary for that, and then we continue, and I believe we're still using CBIZ, that I looked at the budget from 2018 discussions as our broker. Now, one of the things that Sierra Vista did, and I only bring this up because I know Ms. Jacobs is very familiar with it since she came from it, by Resolution 615, they appointed a five-member basically board staggered 3-year terms to basically go over and the claims history of the town. And they've continued this throughout the entire course of the time that they've had self-funding. And I do have one of the agendas here, which I can leave with the clerk if you want to take a look at it, but it's also available publicly online. But some things like they talk about is medical claims reports, teledoc utilization reports, prescription claims reports, dental claims reports. And again, I know that you go through the budget on an annual basis, and with the council study sessions, a lot of times it does not give a lot of time to have robust discussions, and this is something that needs to be done on an ongoing basis to look at your claims history. And through Arizona state statutes, obviously if there's claims issues, members or participants of the plan do have the ability to sue, and the sue would be going to the town of Oro Valley. So it's prudent, in my opinion, to do due diligence to make sure that we're making the best descriptions and judgments calls based on medical insurance that we can. And as I mentioned, this would be potentially a board. Obviously, you guys could take it up as well. But I think there's a lot of activity that goes on throughout the year. And I don't think that would be something that would be advisable. So again, I just bring this to your attention because it seems like we still are not getting to that level where we need to actually have some oversight of our medical benefits and continue to look at that as an option as we move forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I'll leave the information here with the clerk if you want to take a look at it.
David has joined us, so
orthodontist delays. My apologies.
So if we could correct the roll call to show him as present, thank you. Has everyone had a chance to take a look at last meeting's minutes?
Mr. Chair, I have. I would move approval.
I second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carry.
Mr. Chair, we also had the council liaison comments on the agenda and a staff liaison report.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members of the commission, last week, Thursday evening, we had a volunteer appreciation dinner at Tohono O'Chul Park and had the opportunity to recognize the various boards and commissions and many other volunteers that help contribute to the operations and other ways of our town and community. Kathy Salverson was the lone representative from this particular commission, but we were happy to have her and her husband. But I, as part of that, I just simply wanted to, as an extension of that evening, express appreciation for your service on this commission. Recognize that that this represents just a small part of your time as you prepare for these meetings and reading and various reports and so on and so forth. We also appreciate your families who support you in this volunteer effort. It's typically not a solo effort, but requires support from others. And I would just simply like to wish you the happiest and safe holidays this season. As I mentioned in the last meeting, this will be my last commission meeting as official liaison member of the council. Councilmember Josh Nicholson will assume this role beginning in 2020. But thank you.
Mr. Chair,
as far as my report tonight, I did want to notify the commission that the actuarial evaluation was posted on the Public Safety Retirement's website on Friday. So we will be bringing an agenda item back to the commission for the Public Safety Retirement System.
Mr. Chair, I have a go back.
So since our last meeting, we have a new commission member. And Michael, I'm struggling to read your last name from this distance.
Mason.
I thought it was Mason, but I just simply acknowledge that I couldn't quite make it out. But we welcome you to as our newest member on the commission. So thank you.
Thank you.
Kevin, what do you see to be the timing for the presentation on the pension information?
Mr. Chair, I believe in the January meeting we'll be able to come back with most likely a tasking memo as far as what the commission, the task for the commission as far as the public safety retirement system, and we can give an update on the report then at that point.
How about the employee pension, non-police side?
At this point in time, I don't think this commission has been agendized to have it. I don't think you received the direction from the council or the manager on that one yet, so we're waiting for them, if it happens, okay?
Okay.
Okay, we ready for item number two, discussion and possible action on a recommendation to town council related to the state-imposed expenditure limitation. So I did want, since the chair wasn't here at the last meeting and we have a new commissioner, I was going to go back through some of the background information that we did at the last meeting. So for the three of you, I apologize, some of the information will be the same as you saw last time. So just some background. The Arizona Constitution and Arizona Revised Statute impose an expenditure limitation on every city and town in the state. And what they established was the baseline expenditures from fiscal years 1979-80 as your baseline expenditure limit. So back in 1979-80, the town of Oro Valley's budget was $272,317. So that is what our base limit starts at. Then from that limit, the State Economic Estimates Commission adjusts the limitation each year, and they adjust it for two items. For a standard inflation rate, and that's a standard rate across all cities and towns, and then they also have a population growth factor. And so our population back in 1979-80 was 1,475. They list our current 2018 population as 45,184. So they simply take that factor, and it comes out to a factor of 30.63, multiply that times that original base adjustment of 272,000, multiply it by the inflation rate, and they come up with a new adjusted expenditure limitation for the town. And so currently for fiscal year 1920, our expenditure limitation is a little over $25,700,000. So there's several reasons that the expenditure limit or the state-imposed limitation doesn't work for Oro Valley. Number one, it assumes that the 1979-80 budget provided sufficient service levels. So, for example, the residents today are demanding more services when it comes to parks and recreation than was likely required back in 1979 and 80. We also didn't have a water utility back in 1979-80. So taking on that water utility, which currently has a budget of about $21 million, wasn't factored into our original limitation. It also does not account for any new revenue sources. So back in 79-80, we didn't have impact fees. Currently, we have impact fees, and those fund infrastructure for new growth. We have additional water revenues that I spoke about earlier that were not being received back in 79-80. And then we've also had an increase in our sales tax rate, and that was not factored in. So, again, the state doesn't factor in any of those new revenues, increases in rates. They only factor in that population growth and the inflation growth. And then finally, it doesn't account for any increases in commercial activity. So again, a town or a city may annex a commercial area that generates significant sales tax, and that revenue comes into the town and then is expended on services. But those revenues would not be, again, accounted for in the adjustment to the population or the inflation factor. So our current state-imposed expenditure limitation plus exclusions, we're at about $40 million for fiscal year 19-20, and it goes up to $44.7 million in 22-23. Our current fiscal year 19-20 budget is $111 million. So you can see we're about $70 million over what the state-imposed limitation would be if we were not on home rule currently. And so talking about home rule allows the town to set the alternative expenditure limitation at its adopted budget. So what this is considered is really local control of our spending. Whatever the town adopts the budget for a given year, that is and becomes your state-imposed limitation for that fiscal year. The home rule option has been in place here for almost 40 years. It must be approved by the voters, and the approval is required every 4 years. The other option is the permanent base adjustment option, and the permanent base adjustment goes back and modifies that expenditure base from $79.80, that $272,000. So it allows you to go back and say, okay, that wasn't an appropriate baseline to start with. You can go back and change that beginning dollar amount. It is required by an approval by the voters, one-time approval. So there is some reduction of election cost and staff time every 4 years so that we're not having to prepare for that election, putting together all the election materials. So there is some cost savings there to do the permanent base adjustment. And then finally, it provides some stability to service levels. It allows you to have that stability when you're looking forward 10, 15, 20 years. You know what your expenditure limitation is. You don't have to go back to the voters every 4 years. So in order to analyze our base amount, staff went back and looked at a 10-year budget history. So we went back to 2010-11 and compared our operating contingency and capital budgets for the past 10 years. So you can see back in 2010-11, our total budget was $116 million, a little over $116 million. And then we had the effects of the Great Recession, and our budget actually decreased for 3 years after that. And a lot of that was in the operating side. The operating and the capital side were where the decreases came into play. So over that 10-year period, our operating budget has gone from $51.4 million to $72.7 million. And that's an average annual increase of about 4.11% per year. The contingency budget, this fiscal year, the town actually changed the way we budget for our contingency. For the first 9 years of this period, the full amount of the fund balance was budgeted as our contingency. So whatever we had as fund balance, that full amount was budgeted. What we did in fiscal year 19-20 is we changed it to what was available in our resources as our contingency. So that's why you can see the contingency budget went down from $39 million down to $5 million. And so that significantly dropped our total budget from 18-19 of almost $143 million down to $111 million. So staff just used this as a baseline to determine our annual growth rates. The operating is a little over 4%. Capital was a little under 1%. But you can see on the capital side that the capital isn't a linear analysis of the budget. The capital budget will go down and up from year to year, depending on if if a capital project got completed in 1 year or had to be rolled over to another year. So you don't see a nice linear pattern to a capital budget. So from that information, staff then took that and projected for 20 years out to determine what our operating contingency and capital budgets would be. I did use the lower contingency amount here, so started with the base of $5.3 million and had it grow for the first 10 years, and then I left it consistent for the second 10-year period. The operating budget increased by 4.1% each of the years, and the capital went up by a little bit under 1%. So we're projecting that our total budget for fiscal year 2021 would be approximately $114 million and grow to $209 million over that 20-year period. Now, this doesn't factor in any type of recessionary periods that will likely happen over a 20-year period, but we're really just trying to get that top side of what our expenditures could be. But there will likely be some corrections in the economy, which will then reduce our budget for a given year or two, and then we'll start growing again after that point. So then next, staff went in and also projected what the expenditure limitation would grow. So what the population growth of the town will be and what inflationary growth will be. So we used a factor of 2.5% for the inflationary growth over the 20-year period. And I used a 1% growth rate on the population for the first 10 years, and then 0.5%, and then for the years 16 through 20, actually left the population growth at zero at that point for the expenditure limitation projection. Then went in and compared our projected expenditure limitation to what our budget was projected. So this budget number comes directly from the previous slide here. So we've got $114 million in the first year. Comparing that to our permanent base adjustment of $1.4 million. So what staff did is we went in and looked at what an adjustment of $1.4 million as our baseline expenditure amount would be, did the population increase and the inflation factor, and that would get us to an expenditure limitation of $137 million for fiscal year 2021. And that would give us excess capacity from our expenditure limitation over the budget of approximately $23 million. And as you can see, that number continues to grow, but that would be expected as our budget is growing. And what we tried to do was to keep this fairly consistent at approximately a 20% delta between the projected expenditure limitation and what our budget is. And so I also have the model in Excel, and we can plug in different numbers if the commission is wanting to see what a $1.3 million adjustment would be or a $2 million adjustment. So we can model some different scenarios based on what the commission would like to see. So with that, staff recommends a permanent base adjustment to at least $1.4 million and have that placed on the August 2020 ballot. And then staff further recommends that the Budget and Finance Committee study the options and ultimately make a recommendation to Town Council. And so with that, I also have, again, this model here, and I apologize for the size of it, but we can plug in real time some different amounts if you're wanting to see what a different adjustment would do to our permanent base. So with that, Mr. Chair, is available for questions that you may have.
Ms. Jacobson, Mr. Arts, this isn't something that's very easy to wrap your hands around because you don't deal with it day in and day out. So when you first gave us this assignment, I had to take some time to explore what permanent base adjustment is. I don't like the word permanent, but anyway, that's what I had to do. And so can we just take a step back from the numbers for a few minutes and take a look at why we're making this recommendation? The recommendation seems pretty straightforward. We want to move the town to a permanent-based adjustment program, and we want to do that by adjusting, and I know there's a lot of steps, but we want to adjust that to $1.4 million per annum. And so the question is, in terms of the actual recommendation that the council's looking for from us, is it that simple, or is there other things they'll be looking for in terms of what we're proposing here? We talk about inflation factors, we talk about population growth, but what is the, I don't want to overcomplicate this, but I don't want to leave anything out that the council may be wanting from this commission.
I'll start and then I'll turn it over to Mr. Arts. You know, the reason why we're moving forward with this is a couple of different things. We use a lot of political capital when we go to the voters every 4 years for something just because we have to, when even the community says, why do we have to do that? And we have to explain it every single time. And so it's, well, because the state law says, because in 1979, and that, so we use a lot of political capital to do that. And we have another solution that we can bring forward, use some political capital once, and then we don't have to worry about that for a while. We check off that box, and basically all we're doing is saying to the community, hey, our budget in 1979-80 was $200,000+. The state is making us use that number as a base in some formula in terms of what we can spend. If all we do is go from $250 to $1.4 million, then we don't have to come back to you again for 20 years. That's really, I mean, that's as simple of an explanation as it is. So it's our responsibility to take a look at, what number does that need to be in order for us to have some reasonable degree of sustainability so that we don't have to go back out for a permanent, because we're so conservative on it that we go back for a permanent base adjustment in 6 years because we didn't plan accordingly. And so what we did is we simply said, okay, a 20% buffer, 20% wiggle room for things that maybe we aren't thinking of right now, that a future council may decide that they want to do, or a type of program that they want to offer, or a grant opportunity, a lot of different things that we can't predict, but it gives us that little bit of wiggle room is really what we're looking at. And so all we felt there's no magic to this. We went back the 10 years as a reasonable predictor on an estimated 20-year forecast on what we think would be, a fair way to go. So I don't think, and I think if we, and we're happy to answer any questions that you may have. My suggestion, my recommendation to you is that spending a lot of time in the weeds on whether or not our analysis should be a half a cent or a quarter cent, a quarter percent different from this versus this or whatever, is not going to get us to change much in terms of what that final recommendation is. I would recommend that you focus on, do you think that 20% buffer on our projection is reasonable for an elected body to have going into the future to provide the council with some degree of flexibility or unknown to address the unknown that maybe we're not aware of. Maybe we will have, as an example, maybe we will have a redevelopment of an area that is going to be so successful in retail sales that our retail dollars are going to go up, but if our expenditure limitation isn't there, we can't spend it. And so that's what we're trying to build in. And I would love it if we we're 20% more, and we had that kind of success, but that's what we're trying to build into this process.
So in response to that, the council then is really looking for just the basic recommendation. So we should move to a permanent base adjustment, and we should do so by this amount, because we feel, as a commission and recommendation, that this is more than adequate to provide for the future. I mean, that's really, can I get any more simpler than that?
That's about it, and I think that's what you're tasking states. I am bringing this forward to the council, for sure, with a recommendation, and I would like us to be on the same page in terms of what that recommendation is going to be, but if we've missed something or you have a different perspective on things, that this is where we want to get into that. Let's chew on it a little bit and get that that citizen perspective so that then it goes to the council with that full breadth of analysis.
Right. And the home rule that we're currently operating under has been in place since 1980, if I remember correctly.
It's a state law that every community in the state must follow.
Right. So that, yeah, it's constitutionally required.
Not constitutionally. Legislatively.
So the home rule that has been in effect, have we had any pushback from the citizenry regarding the use of the home rule in setting our expenditure limitations?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, no. In fact, the town of Oro Valley has had a very strong success, and while I don't have the numbers in front of me, my understanding is over 70% voter approval every 4 years for the home rule that we're required to bring before them if we didn't move forward with this alternative approach.
But we haven't had any challenges from groups or individuals in the community that would indicate that the home rule is not working for us. It appears to be working for us. And moving to the permanent base adjustment and the recommendation that we would make to the council will enable the council to feel more confident with making this move and going. And I also understand we can't advocate for the change. We just have to present the information to the voters and everything.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, what we can do up until the point that something has actually been placed on a ballot, I can certainly recommend, you can recommend,
right.
The council can vote to place it on the ballot. Once that is done, then we can provide factual information, but I'm not certain if that applies to members of boards and commissions. I believe elected body and staff, and maybe our attorney can weigh in on that.
Commissions are not supposed to take part in it either.
So you're on the hook as well. You can't. You can provide information. You can't advocate, except as an individual.
Okay, so just a couple of more questions historically. I'm just trying to understand the base from which we're working at. And has the town or any of the councils considered a permanent base adjustment before?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman, to my knowledge, and again, I've only been here a little over 2 years, I don't believe that this approach has been presented to a prior elected body.
Okay. So they've
never Methuselah sitting around here, it has not been presented.
Okay.
So this will be the first time that they have said it.
Correct. I want to say about 45% of the municipalities in the state of Arizona use the permanent base adjustment tool instead of the home rule tool, and that it simply has not come before this council to consider previously.
Has the council been informed of our work here? Are they aware that we're doing this, and are they pretty informed about what a permanent base adjustment is?
They will be, but I have. I have let them know over time that this is coming, but I haven't delved into the details of what it is.
Gotcha. All right, well,
and that's on an individual basis, if I may.
All right. I'm just trying to understand where we're coming from. And,
of course.
How we're going to proceed here. Thank you.
Okay. In regard to the 20% delta, your piece, your overage to the budget. Couple questions on that, just kind of bounding it, right? Is it the right number? So one of my questions was, have we done any looking at what do the other 40% of the towns that have the PBA use as our kind of guidance for that?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Solverson, I have not done any background information on how other communities have established their permanent base. Some of them may have done it 15, 20 years ago. So I have not spent any time trying to determine what other communities have done, no.
Okay. Is there any way of kind of doing a top-level look at that just to see kind of are we in the ballpark of what maybe makes sense?
Well, in your packet, there is a report here that's called the Final 2019-20 Expenditure Limitation for Cities and Towns.
Right.
And I can go through and just point out a couple that stood out to me as I looked through them. So if you look on the bottom of the third page, the City of Surprise. So you can see the City of Surprise back in 1978 had a population of 3,500, just slightly above where we're at. And they went in and did a permanent base adjustment to $9.5 million, and that has made their expenditure limitation $1.1 billion almost. So they went, in my opinion, to an extreme mm-hmm. of an expenditure limitation that they're never going to reach. I mean, the City of Phoenix is the only community in the state that has a larger expenditure limitation now than the City of Surprise. Okay. So I believe that that's on an extreme
right.
to go that high. You know, as the town manager mentioned, we felt that the 20% gave future councils an adequate buffer if the commission wants to see what a $1.5 million adjustment would be and see what that percentage would be. We can do that through the model. But.
Right. So I guess my concern would be, and my question is, I think the operating expenses are, to your point, linear. They go up by, you know, X percent a year based on cost increases, and it's pretty easy to predict. Capital is a little lumpier, nonlinear, and my concern, I guess, would be, is it, are you going to have enough room for if there's anything that comes up that is maybe unforeseen, and I don't know, maybe have the discussion about what things could come up. I mean, capital, you build a building and you're spending a whole lot of money, right? Some years there's lots and some years there's not lots. And the other kind of issue I had with it was if there was something like an annexation, and I know that there's some issues out there right now, would it behoove us to factor that potential in to make sure that you've got that covered? And is there any risk, like you showed us the City of Surprise, is there any risk in increasing it? Is there the risk that it won't pass? Because why do we need a potential budget of, you know, $500 million if we're, you know, that kind of thing? Mm-hmm. So is there any risk in that? Or
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Solverson, I do believe at some point there becomes some risk if we are unreasonable on what that expenditure limitation is. What that dollar amount is, I don't know, right. but I do believe there's risk.
I mean, I feel it's reasonable what you've got, the 20%. Sure, I mean, I can't imagine that wouldn't be good enough, right? Unless there's some big surprise, like something big happens, like an annexation or a, I don't know what, but something right. larger than normal operating procedures.
And one of the mitigating factors in that is if you look over the 10-year period of capital, it goes anywhere from basically a $9 million capital budget to $33 million. So I used the higher end as our starting point.
Right, right.
And so over that 10-year period, I believe it'll be in the $20 to $40 million range. And that's what you can see is happening here over that 20-year period. We're right there in that $20 to $35 million period. You are correct. There there could be an accumulation of fund balance for several years and do one large project for $20 million.
Mm-hmm. Or could you split a capital project into a couple of years?
Yes, then you could split it over a couple of budget years if you needed to stay within your limitation.
Right.
There's also other options that I know the current council may not be fond of, but bonding for your capital projects is an exclusion. So if you issue bonds and then build a capital project, that doesn't fall under your expenditure limitation. So 15 years from now, if we were getting tight on our expenditure limitation, we could issue bonds instead of doing a cash financing for it. So there's some flexibility there and some workarounds.
Okay.
We don't call them workarounds in public finance, just so you know.
Is there any history in with these other 45% of the cities that have gone this route where they have gotten voter approval and then had to go back for voter approval? And if there are, can you look at, well, they only allowed, you know, a 10% cushion. Okay, so maybe we say, you know, that's probably not enough. Just as kind of, a bounding thing.
Yes, there's definitely been other communities that have gone out and done a permanent base adjustment and then had to go back and do another one.
Okay.
I believe the city of Tucson had originally done an adjustment and may have gone to home rule and then a permanent base adjustment.
So why did they have to redo that? Why did they have to go back? Was it because they didn't, their start point wasn't large enough? Was it because they grew too much? Was it because they annexed? I mean, can you get any lessons learned out of that? Because I think if you got this passed and then in 5 years we went back to the voters, maybe that wouldn't be a good thing. But if we figured out, okay, we're pretty confident in this number that can take us 20 years, are there any lessons learned in other cities having gone through this?
Would you like to make any comments on this?
Well, I think Ms. Jacobs brought it up, the fact that your political capital. I know with Tucson there was a couple very close, there was some elections to get the whole rule approved, and it got to be very, very close sometimes. So I think that's why they went to the permanent adjustment, just to take that factor out as much as possible.
Okay.
Ultimately, aren't your expenditure numbers going to be fairly closely linked to your revenues stream? Even if you could do bonding at some point, you've got to be able to service it. So why wouldn't you come up with a larger, more flexible number?
And Mr. Chair, that is absolutely a possibility. If the commission would like to recommend a larger adjustment to have more flexibility. From staff's perspective, this was kind of the floor, the minimum amount that we thought would be appropriate would be the $1.4 million.
On that vein, how closely does the Auditor General's office look at the submission that we'll have to make to them? Are they expecting to see a reasonableness test for all of these assumptions?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Vice Chair, as far as our projections in coming up with our base, they don't analyze the numbers for reasonableness. They ensure that the population factors and the inflation factors that are used are coming from the state and we're using the appropriate amounts. But again, as you can see, for surprise, they didn't look at the reasonableness of doing an adjustment that took them to $1 billion budget.
So they're not going to ask you to substantiate the number that we come up with as an adjustment. And just to be clear for me, the amount of $1.4 million in your example here, that's not replacing the original $250. Is that adding on, or is it a replacement?
That would be the replacement for it. So it would change the base from $272,000 to $1.4
million.
Okay. So is there any reason why you wouldn't have it higher? Is there any risk in putting it higher other than maybe it doesn't pass?
That is the big risk that staff sees, is that if it becomes too large and is unreasonable, then you might have some of the voting population not understanding what it is and thinking that that's creating a budget that large.
Right. Okay.
Do we have an, and notice your future projection with this would be placed on the August 2020 ballot. What else would we anticipate being on that ballot?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Newell, to our knowledge at this point, the only items that would be on the primary ballot for the town of Oro Valley would be the primary election of council members and this item. And the town does have a practice of using the primary election for these types of things because that's when typically the election of council members happens at the primary and doesn't typically go to the general. So it seems to make sense to ask our voters if they're going to vote in a local election that we would want them to participate in the local election, which is that particular one, and then we're not competing also against a presidential election in 2020. And then also it's part of our cost. It would be the same cost. We wouldn't have to pay any additional fees for a subsequent election if we have nothing on the ballot for the general election in November.
And then also, if I may add, the other benefit of that is by doing the permanent base in 2020, if it does not pass, we're still on home rule at that point through 2022, and then we could go back for a home rule election in 2022. So it gives us that flexibility that if for some reason it didn't pass, we still have our home rule alternative, and we could go back for either a permanent base adjustment or a home rule election in 2022.
Right. Evan, if we use your numbers as a base, $250 million, what would it take to get us to, say, $500 million? That might be an upper end range.
So if we changed our permanent base adjustment to $2 million, that would give us a capacity of approximately 70% that stays pretty consistent over the time period, and that would get us a projected expenditure limitation starting of about $200 million up to $354. So your question was to get to
I'm just trying to bracket this thing. To see what gives us or gives the town enough flexibility, but yet, you know, $1 billion is probably not a rational number that you can sell. But something less than that, where people understand over the history of the town, there have been annexations, there has been growth. So where can we sort of get in between where something is reasonable but flexible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so looking at the model, if we changed the permanent, we've basically doubled it to $2.8 million, by year 20 out there, we're almost to a $500 million expenditure limitation. We'd be starting at a $275 million expenditure limitation and would give us capacity over 100% of what we believe our budget will be.
So tell me why you wouldn't want to do that. What's the downside? What's the difficulty in attempting to sell that kind of a number?
If I may answer that question, Mr. Chairman, I think that there's always confusion with our residents when you're talking about public finance. There just naturally is. And so while I do think that we have a great opportunity to communicate with the residents when you say, hey, we're just changing this number from 1979 that says $279,000, we're going to move it to whatever, let's just say $2 million for round numbers. Because that's basically what the question will say. The question will say, should the town of Oro Valley, you know, residents change this from, you know, this to this. That's as simple as it's going to be. But explaining it, I mean, think about the kind of conversation that we're having here. There is a really careful balance, and we go through this every 2 years with our outreach effort and letting folks know when they know, as an example, that if the home rule is not passed, then we end up only being able to spend 1/3 of the money we can collect, and therefore we couldn't offer public safety services the way that we do, you know, all that. That's an easy sell. That ends up, people get that. But I'd have a challenge telling folks that we want to provide 150% of additional capacity just in case. I think the just in case number should be something more conservative for this conservative community. And that would be my recommendation, is that we look at, I don't know what that is. Is it 20%? Is it 30%? Is it 50%? Can we live with 50%? And I don't know, Kevin, throw in put $1.6 million just for comparison. Not billion. No.
Ms. Jacobs, Mary, let me, while you're looking at that real quickly, has there been any review of this in light of the general plan? Is there anything in the general plan that would require us to have more capacity?
No. This has nothing to do with our future plans. And I think, see, this is the challenge that we have in communicating this to the residents. The change in this has absolutely no impact on what it is that we're going to collect and what we're going to spend. Those are two very, very separate things. It doesn't have any impact on our plans. It doesn't have any impact. All it has an impact on is our ability to spend what we collect. That is it. And so we want to provide just enough capacity in there that, A, we don't have to go back to the voters every 4 years, so that we don't confuse them. B, that we're planning for unforeseen things that we can't predict at this point, but we want to provide that a little bit of a buffer. And C, something that we can easily explain and justify. And that's why we as staff felt that the $1.4 million was reasonable, you know, or something in that neighborhood. Is the direction that we were headed in. But that's why you're getting this first crack, so that, because you're looking at it from the lens of the community, and that's why we need your input, so that it, you know, we understand, okay, here's what we're trying to communicate. And don't get me wrong, this process right here, this is not our communications effort. If the council votes to place this on the ballot in August, we, of course, will develop a very robust, you know, communication strategy and make sure education and outreach strategy and that sort of thing. And then we hope we're kind of done for a while. And that's really our hope behind it.
On the contingency, I guess I don't completely understand this change. But if you had for this year, fiscal year 2019-20, if you hadn't changed the contingency, what would the 1.4 be? Does that make sense? So if you could just plop in your model, contingency is, you know.
So theoretically, if a future council wanted to go back to the other, mm-hmm. the old way we
yeah,
did things.
Yeah, I just want to know, what does that do to the one? What does it make the 1.4?
Okay.
Because I feel a little bit like, well, gosh, your contingency is so much lower that, you know, your cushion is lower with that.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Silverson, the reason why we made that change is it really is the best practice, mm-hmm. that you don't budget the full amount of
right.
your contingency
right.
in the budget.
Right.
And I don't believe, I know certainly I won't recommend that we go back to, not
no.
to say that a future
right.
town manager might make that recommendation. But having the savings that we have, our fund balances, doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to spend those, you know, we probably wouldn't dip into our entire 25% in one
right.
particular year
right.
without an emergency. And there are clauses and exemptions for emergencies and that sort of thing. So I think that we would still be,
okay.
you know, we'd still have. But I know that Kevin did a quick little math on that one.
Yeah, And the other thing to realize is if we did spend the contingency in any one year, it would be gone, and we wouldn't have that available to spend in future years. So it would be a one-time problem for that year if they budgeted it and spent it.
Okay.
But basically, under the $1.4 million example, you would basically, that additional contingency would be using up, utilizing that extra capacity. So if the town did go back to budgeting contingency that way, you would probably want to go to a higher base adjustment than $1.4 million.
What happens in 20 years? We go back to the voter to reestablish this?
Mr. Chair, it is a permanent adjustment. We're just doing the analysis over a 20-year period. But in theory, if you adjust it correctly that first time, and then we have inflationary growth in our budget, you have inflationary growth in your expenditure limitation. So in theory, if you do it right the first time, your population growth and your inflation growth of your expenditure limit should keep pace with the increases in your budget.
If you're not adding anything, or if you're not buying anything, or if you're not expanding.
Correct. Right? But if you're annexing and you're bringing in new residents, then that's going to change your population factor, and that is going to increase your base. The one thing that I could think of is if the town was able to go out and annex a big commercial area that doesn't increase your population. But if you could go out and annex
houses
of the Foothill Mall or something like that, that would generate $10 million of revenue, that would be additional revenue to the town. Our budget would increase, but our expenditure limitation wouldn't, because we're not adding population.
Right.
So as long as you're adding people, your expenditure limitation is going to factor up.
I guess I look at this as primarily and I appreciate this came from staff, and this is something we're looking at, but this is really on the council's plate. We think about what the resources of the town are, but for all of us, the most important resource we have is time. You know, as we live, we will pay more and more to have more of it, and we treasure it more. And this is going to call this is you know passing this is going to be an investment of the council's time, Mr. Mayor, and if the council feels that this is a good investment of their time to put it in front of the voters and run that communication plan and organize some volunteers in case there is some resistance in the community, I see no reason why I wouldn't support that. But I would like some further, I would prefer to see some unanimous, I know that's hard to get to all the time, but I would like to see at least a large consensus of the council feel that this is a worthy council goal for the next year before I spend a lot of time on this, because if this is just going to be something we put on the ballot that then is going to be used as a campaign, something that goes along with a campaign for council seats, I think that would be a detriment to the community. So I would like to see some more council feedback and direction on, yes, we think this is a good idea. This is something we want to spend our time on, staff, and also your mandate time before it moves forward. Because if we just put something like this forward, we're essentially putting something on the ballot to the people, and, the population can only deal with so many issues at once. There's an amount of time investment that the community has to make changes. And I don't think we've seen any indication from council yet that this is where they want the community to invest their time in. Obviously, this has a lot of value. That means we're saving time going to them every 4 years. It removes uncertainty. There's a lot of good reasons for this. But specifically in this calendar year, we're asking to take your time to consider this item. And I'd like to see some feedback from you and the council that you as a group think this is a good investment of your time.
May I respond, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Newell? The council will be considering this, and we have a very tight timetable in which they have to make a decision. So we structured this process, and they won't have an opportunity to have a discussion about this until this comes before them with my recommendation. And so the reason why you're being asked to weigh in is to provide that perspective for council. So that ends up being a part of their deliberations. So if there won't be an opportunity for the item to go to the council and come back to the Budget and Finance Commission, I mean, unless it would be a super, super tight timetable, because, and I believe we provided you with the schedule, the council would need to make a decision by their second meeting in February in order to get this on the ballot and have us meet all of the check marks for the publicity brochure and you know, notification to the county and that sort of thing. And if that doesn't happen, and that is in fact a political decision on the part of, and a legislative decision on the part of the council, if they legislatively feel that this is not a good time, I respect that, and we will pull it off, and that will be the end of that, and we'll bring it back in 4 years. So it is now, or it is 4 years from now, because we're bringing it. It really needs to happen in between home rule elections, so that we don't, if for some reason we confused the public and it didn't pass, we still would have an opportunity and we wouldn't be restricted by our expenditure limitation. And so from a timing perspective, I don't see an opportunity for this to come back to the Budget and Finance Commission, which is why we kind of outlined the schedule that you would have three full meetings in which to review and discuss and provide a recommendation on this before it goes to council, as opposed to council giving you the direction. This is what I'm going to recommend, and I'm the one who gave you the tasking on it.
Is there a cost to putting the home rule on the ballot every time they do it? And
yes.
So there would therefore be a savings if we got this passed, then you would be saving each time.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Salverson, I don't recall off the top of my head exactly what the cost is, but we have to pay for a ballot, we have to pay for a publicity pamphlet that has to be mailed to all of the residents, and then of course all the staff time that goes into the development of the communication strategy, presentations at every HOA and group that we can possibly imagine, which of course would be part of our communication strategy if this went on the ballot as well.
Just a quick question. On your the official expenditure limitation we get from the state, it has it at $25 million. How does that relate to the 137 that you have up there, that column?
So what you have in front of you is our existing limitation. Let me get back to it here. So if you plug in the 272 here, and the factors are going to be a little different because I've started projecting growth in them. But so our original permanent base is 272. That gives us an expenditure limitation here of 26. On the official record, it's $25 million. So that's where we would be projecting our current budget. So this is where we'd be anywhere from $80 to $100 million over our expenditure limitation, if we did not have one of the two alternatives, either being home rule or the permanent base adjustment.
Okay. Also, have you put this information into the actual expenditure limitation report that you would have to do using the full exclusions and all that? If you did that, that would kind of give you an idea of how this limitation is going to compare to the expenditures that you have. And so even if you based it on 2019, that would give you a pretty good idea that the adjustments you've chosen would be reasonable or fall within the excess as you show here. So that'd be a good thing to do, just to to see how it works out, and you'd have that then to show everybody that here's how the report goes to the state, here's how it's calculated, here's our new adjustment, here's how far below the experience limitation that we are.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Mason, we have not gone back in and plugged these numbers in to our expenditure limitation. For home rule, the expenditure limitation reporting is very easy. Right. It's basically your budget was this, your expenditures were this amount, what's the difference? It's literally three numbers on your expenditure limitation. When you go to a permanent base adjustment, it will take significantly more staff time. The auditors will have to spend more time auditing the numbers because you get to eliminate depreciation expense. You get to eliminate intergovernmental, any expenses from revenues from intergovernmental revenue that was subject to somebody else's permanent base or not permanent expenditure limitation. Sorry, I'm getting my.
But if you did this in your, if you just took this year's actuals and went ahead and just did a report just for comparison purposes, that would give you a pretty good idea of how your permanent base adjustment will impact your expenditure limitation, because then you could kind of see how far below or where you are. Obviously you're not going to submit that one, but it would be kind of an estimate of what it would look like. And then that gives you a little bit more information to say that this is a good number without being too excessive.
Right. Absolutely. We could go back and do that at a very high level. We wouldn't get into all the details, but we could definitely go back and mock up an expenditure limitation report for fiscal year 2019 with an adjustment of $1.4 million or whatever it is that we decide on here, and show you what that would mean to the expenditure limitation report. But it's going to be very similar to what these numbers here are. I'm not factoring in any of those exclusions at this point.
Right.
I'm not going in and so it would actually help the numbers because you would eliminate, again, depreciation expense. When we did the home rule, we estimated that we would have approximately $14 million of exclusions. So that's what I would anticipate we would have if we were to go through and do the mock-up as you're suggesting.
So to that point, catching on what you're saying there, Mike, is that the model that you've built here actually is being very conservative because you're not taking into consideration those exemptions or exclusions.
Correct.
So, which amount to right now probably $14 million, which would be a roughly 12% of budget. So you've got that additional capacity already built into this model as you look forward, and that continues to grow, assuming you made no other changes to the model over the next 20 years.
That's correct.
Because that money will never count against that limitation.
Just for a background, right now a lot of your capital expenditure, I know you had some debt out there. Is that primarily through pay-as-you-go, or do you tend to finance? Is that the plan in the future, too, is to try to tend to finance versus?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Mason, the town has the water utility has a pattern of financing in order to keep rates relatively stable. So I think we could anticipate some degree of financing in the area of the water utility pretty consistently. The town has financed various capital projects over the years. And it certainly is not out of the question in the future, depending on what those demands are and how quickly, those needs would want to be installed. But in the immediate future, I would say that it's probably not on the horizon, but things could change. And I would, I certainly would want to make sure that, that is a very typical municipal tool that's used in order to get infrastructure installed sooner rather than later, and also spread out the cost to you know, for more of that intergenerational equity as far as contribution on the part of residents who are using the facility. And so, you know, my experience with it is that financing is a very useful tool so that you can get things installed that the community, you know, that meet the needs of the community and also the operations.
Thank you.
Just to confirm, the baseline number we're proposing as a floor would not be would be enough contingency to feel comfortable with the current level of services for the town. One of the main drivers of the current base not being sufficient would be, of course, that we bought a water utility quite a few years ago, and we now provide water. If we did something like bought another utility or large public service, we would probably have to readjust this, correct?
Mr. Chair and Commissioner Newell, yes. I believe if the town wanted to go out and get into the wastewater business and build a wastewater plant and operate that, you're probably going to need an adjustment.
I didn't put out a specific. I said a future utility that we do not know exists or something, whether it be.
Does the League of Cities or the Auditor General have any recommendations on this process?
Mr. Chair, no, they do not. The League of Cities puts out a packet for each town to guide us through the election process, whether we want to do the home rule or the permanent base, but they really, it's really a local decision, and the league or the Auditor General's office doesn't provide any guidance as far as what's an appropriate amount.
I noticed that Avondale has home rule. You're from that town, as I recall. Did you go through this decision process before?
Mr. Chair, we had the discussion with council on two different occasions discussing the permanent base adjustment, and one of them was just as we were coming out of the recession and they felt like it wasn't a good time to take something new. And so both times the council felt more comfortable with the home rule and wanted to continue with that process. Again, one of them was a timing issue, and I honestly don't remember why they didn't want to move forward the second time around that we brought it forward to them.
Is there any
addition? I would just add there's never a good time.
Is there any additional education that we should have and the town council should have relative to these kinds of numbers and alternatives, even on a joint basis, before this final decision has to be made?
I think that's what we're here to ask you, is you tell us. Is there something that we didn't explain clearly enough? Is there, this is one of those... One of those things that we just have to live with as a local government and do the best job that we can in living with it. And, I and the council already knows this, I will be recommending that the council consider and move forward with a permanent base adjustment. Whether or not they do, we will have that opportunity and they will have that opportunity to discuss it. And they may very well, you know, decide this is the wrong timing or whatever. That is their choice, and I honor that every single time. So I welcome your feedback on whether or not there's additional information that would be helpful both to you and to our elected body as they consider this recommendation and decide, you know, whether or not that's something that should go on the primary ballot in August or not.
Well, I do think that you've mentioned that you've set this number as a conservative number for a conservative town, and I think that's an accurate place to put it. You've answered that this would not cover the purchase of a new utility or large service to be added that is outside the scope. Apology, I got away from the mic there for a second. That would be outside the scope of current services provided by the town, so I think that's reasonable. I would think that there certainly is an upper number that we would be uncomfortable with that becomes less palatable to the voter. That is, as long as the first number is a one and not a two, I think there's probably some benefit to that politically, but I haven't heard that you have any polling or expertise over whether or not the jump from, I believe it was 237,000 to 1.5 is significantly harder than 1.4 or 1,499,995. So there's no information there. We're just taking a guess.
We are, it's a professional opinion. It's some level of experience with 25 years in city management and kind of knowing how to communicate these things with residents, and that's about it. And yes, I would agree with you. I think that when you something under 2 million, but whether or not a resident thinks 1.4 or 1.6 is really any different. And it really is incumbent upon us to provide the kind of education to our residents that would very clearly explain it, engage in with our partners as we always do. We engage with the chamber and we engage with HOAs and we explain to them, you know, the benefit of this. And, I feel confident that we could develop a strong communication strategy that would explain the benefit of doing this and do so in a monetary way. We would save money. We wouldn't have to come back to you every 4 years. You know, we have to, we've got to do this anyway. This is not something that we can get away from. The question is simply how. It's, do we want to do it this way or do we want to do it this way? Not do we not want to do it. That's where we don't have the choice of do we want to do it or not. It's this way or this way. And so that's really all that's before you is it this way or is it this way?
Yeah, I think this is a pretty straightforward process. The state gives us the options to do it. They give us four options. Pick which one is the most beneficial to the town or to the city. It's a lot of calculations that are pretty straightforward, and it comes out. The other part of this is that if people start thinking that the expenditures or rate limitation is too high or too low, we also got to remind them that there's a budget process we go through that really gets into the nitty-gritty of how we spend our money. All this does is what we're trying to do is get the maximum flexibility so that there is no statute that keeps us from spending what we decide is the best thing to spend for the city. So I think when you started out, it's a pretty straightforward process. Again, whatever number you want to use, We probably don't want to have to go back every two or three years. But if you have to adjust it in 5 or 6 years because time changes, the state allows you to do that. So it's just a mechanism to allow the town or the city to give itself the best flexibility possible so that they can provide the services they want to provide.
So are you comfortable with these numbers? Or are you more comfortable with a bigger number?
Mr. Chair, I am comfortable with 1.4 million as the floor. So yes, I'm comfortable with that 20% excess capacity at a minimum.
But having said that, Kevin, in listening to what Mary had to say, you don't want to go back to this well too often. I don't know what too often is. And I don't know what opportunities or capacity that might come down the line, such as my fellow commissioner here has said. You may want to just take a look at what the upper limit is and find something in between that's going to make more sense. I like the fact that you've already included some capacity built into the model that's there inherently and is not going to be separately discussed It's just a matter that here you're putting a limit out there that should be enough to make the town operate for the next 20 years, is what you're saying. And now's probably the best time to take that opportunity. Having seen, I mean, when I first started out with this, you're trying to learn everything about what this system is all about. And really what it's all about is giving local rule where it should reside rather than at the state. And so I agree with what Commissioner Mason said, that you always have that opportunity through the annual budget to analyze what is being collected and what is being spent. So there's no oversight that we're losing here by adopting a number. My opinion is that we ought to find something that's in the middle ground that's got some reasonableness to us, but most importantly tells the citizenry that we're not going to pass by opportunities or services just because we have this artificial limitation of expenditures.
The other thing is you talked about you don't have any kind of recessionary impact in there, but there could also be inflationary impact, and so maybe we do need to increase it for the possibility that given 1 year that happens, as well as lumpy capital.
Yeah, right?
We could have a larger capital for some reason. You've got a lot of things that need to be rebuilt or other capital expenses that come up. So I actually like the idea, but I agree with you, Kevin, that I think probably the 1.4 is going to absolutely cover us. It's going to be plenty. But if there's something extenuating that happens and you bump it up a little bit, maybe we don't have to go back to the well for that 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, would it be helpful to the commission if they understood what all the exclusions are? Because as Kevin mentioned, there's a lot of revenues that are not counted as part of the expenditure limitation. And there's lots of transactions that go on that show up in your expenditures. For example, I would assume since you have a water utility, does the water department charge other city departments for the use of water? So you have those expenditures that show up in the general fund, but yet that does not count against your limitation because it's an exclusion for it. So when you say that if you're going to, something comes along big down the road and we need to finance it, again, depending on how we do that, it may not have any impact on limitation at all. So I think, I guess there's a question to the commission, if you would like to understand what the exclusions are, to give you a little more of an idea of how those types of revenues and expenditures against those revenues would impact the limitation.
Yeah, so I do have the list here. So some of the revenues that are specifically excludable from the state-imposed expenditure limitation is revenues received from the issuance of bonds, revenues received from interest or dividends, revenue from federal grants, and intergovernmental revenues already subject to another entity's expenditure limitation. So those are some of the major revenue categories. So any expenditures that would be coming from those revenues, we would be able to exclude from the expenditure limitation. Then in addition to that would be depreciation expense. That's not an expenditure of the town. It's an allocation. And so the state allows you to exclude any depreciation expense also.
Would state transportation dollars go through the county and thus be subjected to an expenditure limit? Or do those come straight from the state?
Yeah, so if those are funneling through the county, then they would be subject to the county's expenditure limitation and not subject to ours.
So they'd be exclusionary for those, but things directly from the state would be okay.
Yes, because it's important to note that the state does not have an expenditure limitation on itself.
So right now, the schedule is for the 2nd January council meeting. a presentation will be made to them. And they have to debate this two times. So at the February meeting, you would anticipate a go, no-go decision. Is that correct? Is that the timing?
Yes, I believe it was the second meeting in February is when we had planned to take it to council.
We'll do a study session with council, their second meeting in January. So on the 22nd, we'll do a study session so that they have an opportunity to engage and ask questions and then do any follow-up. And then by the second meeting in February, no later than, so they may decide to put it on their first meeting in February, but no later than the second meeting in February, we'll need an answer one way or another, just as to whether or not we're moving forward.
Okay. So you're asking us then to bless some numbers or make a recommendation, I guess I should say, more appropriately, at our next Finance Commission meeting. Is that correct? So between now and then, could we see a potential acceptable range of numbers? Could we also see something that would be used to try to explain this to the public? how would you go about doing this? Is there existing information available as to what ballots look like, as an example, from other towns that went to this type of a program that we may also be able to critique or at least understand at the same time somehow?
We can reach out to the league and see if they can get their hands on what other communities have done or someone that's done it fairly recently.
I will tell you
between now and your next meeting, we don't have, and the holidays, we won't have the bandwidth to develop a communication strategy, nor do I want to spend any staff time on it at this juncture if we don't know if we're going to move forward with it. But we're happy to, Kevin can take this spreadsheet. We can run some additional numbers. We'll put a little bit of a fence around it as far as what we think should be in that range, present that information. We'll put that in your packet. And then we'll reach out to the League of Arizona Cities and Towns. If they can't help us pull us some sample information, a sample ballot, a sample...
They probably have a canned program of some kind, don't they?
I don't think so, because this doesn't come up very often anymore. A lot of the communities that have done it they've been in place for a little while, but we'll certainly, someone might have contacts at the city of Tucson. I'm just saying they might here in the room who could help us out as well. And we'll include that information in your packet so you have an idea.
Could you include a back of the hand estimate on number of staff hours and costs of previous local rule option? This is about what it costs to put it on the ballot every 4 years. It's 100 hours and $20,000 of printing, and just what it is we've spent in the past.
We can certainly give you the cash. As far as the staff hours, I'm
just
not
back
sure.
Of the hand, like this is like what it costs, because again, time is money. If we're doing one thing, we're not doing something else.
Well, I'll get with our team and see if they can't do a...
Yeah, that's all we...
Okay.
The other thing I wanted to throw on is as we've... You've said 1.4 million as a number, and I think that's definitely a conservative number for a conservative town. I would hesitate that we might want to keep it a little larger, because if I would prefer to keep, future councils the opportunity to make large lump sum payments or pass-throughs of monies given to us by the state for our pension deficit. And I'm concerned that the numbers, the physical numbers we're looking at are too tight to the actual actuarial deficit that we currently see in our account balance. Not by a lot, but by just enough that I would prefer it to be a smidge bigger, if that makes sense. And again, I'm not saying that, just to have to make sure future councils have options to say, well, if we, you know, obviously we could do X, Y, or Z, but I don't want to say, but we can't do a direct cash payment or pass through all the money the state is giving to us because we have this, you know, because we have this limitation of expenditure. And the coming from the state would mean that it would not be an exclusion at that point.
Is that based on the state giving us money to do that? Is that what you're suggesting?
I'm saying that if we wanted to either tap our reserves or if someone gave us a matching dollar account or some future legislature made some funds, wishful thinking.
I have never heard Commissioner Newell.
Yeah, I'm happy to be positive, but also, you know, as our reserves grow, it may be possible that we're able to attack the deficit with something larger at some point in the time. So I'd like a little more room for us to be able to do that, so the future councils can have that opportunity.
Are there any other comments, suggestions from any other commission member? No. You know, I appreciate this really is a confusing subject. And I can appreciate that it's going to be confusing to take it to the voters at the same time. So it'd be really nice if we could find a way of using the KISS principle in this thing, but I'm not certain if that's possible or not, since I'm confused. So
that's our job.
Okay. Future agenda items.
I have one consideration that I'd like to discuss at the next commission meeting, and that's our meeting schedule. The town council came out with a meeting schedule at their last meeting that they've set up for all of next year. And the way we originally constructed our meeting schedule, we meet at the third Tuesday of each month. And that happens to be the day before the council meeting in just about every instance. And I'm not sure it really does justice for the council members to be able to see what our discussions have been. And as a matter of fact, the recommendation schedule we have for this very issue we discussed tonight is going to be the night before the council meeting. And so what I'm suggesting is that we take a look at changing the meeting from the third Tuesday of each month to either the second or the fourth. And what that would do is it would put us in a situation of being having our meetings 8 days before a council meeting, and I think it would enable the council members, if they so desire, to be able to look at the video, see the agenda, and review the materials from the commission as they desire. And I can only imagine the day before the council meeting, they're probably pretty inundated. And so just a consideration. I don't know if that conflicts with other commissions, but I thought it would be worth taking a look at to make it easier on the council members.
We'll bring back to you some options. I think that is an appropriate thing for this commission to evaluate. As you know, we have limited spaces, and I will tell you that our Hopi room will be off limits for January through May because we're doing a whole renovation of the lobby in that building, and so that room is going to be the lobby for a few months. So, but we'll do the best that we can to accommodate. So we're going to have limited spaces for the recordings of meetings. We have the Water Commission space, and we have this space without the Hopi, at least for the next few months. But we have a schedule, all of our boards and commission meetings, and we'll be prepared to offer you some slots that are available, and then we're happy to follow up on, you know, at your request.
All right. Well, thank you.
I have one more can we add to the agenda? I don't remember the process. So we have had presentations on the police pension and discussions, and I was wondering if we could get the same on the non-police employee pensions, some information.
I'm in the process and will prepare for you on your next agenda specific tasking. As you know, we can present a variety of different things, and I'll work with Mr. Arts on that. And in terms of the items for the commission's consideration, that you need to be in your specific original tasking from council, or they need to be tasked by myself or by the council voted on. And so we'll get you the tasking, and that one item will be on your agenda for sure for next meeting.
Thanks.
I think it would be valuable just for us to be able to take a look at the entire funding situation of both of those plans. Just put it in perspective relative to, you know, the town's requirements for cash flows, et cetera.
So it's the intention at our next meeting that then we'll have some agenda item on our police pension report. Okay. Could we make sure that agenda also has the possibility of action or recommendation to council from us, depending on what that report would say?
We'll put that down as your desire and we'll check the tasking.
Yep. Okay. Anything else?
Since we're talking about future agenda items and we're coming to a close here, Kevin, will we be seeing the audit anytime soon on the future agenda?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, that should be coming forward in the January meeting.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Motion?
I have a motion to adjourn.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Thank you very much.